Welcome to the By the Hood podcast. Before we start this episode, could you do me a favor? Could you rate and subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts? And also, could you subscribe to our YouTube channel? That's at youtube.com/ByTheHood. What's up, people? Welcome to this episode of the By the Hood podcast or webcast, because I don't know how you're consuming this content. I'm your host as always. My name is Jimmy. And as we start off every show, that's with gratitude. Just want to say thank you to anyone who's shown us any sort of support, because we appreciate it all. If you are watching this video, please do me a favor. Subscribe to our channel. Hit the like button. Do all the good stuff that helps us fight the algos. If you're listening to this podcast, please leave us a comment. Let us know how you feel about this episode. You know, our platform is designed to highlight brothers and sisters, people that look just like us, who are doing amazing work in the community, building businesses. I'm also joined by my partner in crime, Corey, as always. Corey, how are you, sir?
Man, every day above ground is a good day. You know, complaining about life ain't going to make it get any better. So
listen, you woke up this morning. You're doing better than gratitude. A lot of people, right?
Gratitude. Right, cool.
No doubt. Listen, this episode, we have a very special guest. Listen, she's doing amazing things, and I'm very glad that we get a chance to talk to her, because before I even knew, communicated with her on social media, that is, I knew who she was, although she probably had no idea who I was because of YouTube, right? So for those who don't know, I spend an exorbitant amount of time on YouTube. I probably watch YouTube more than regular TV. So the characters and people you know from TV, are your thing. But I know, YouTube personalities probably more so than characters on TV. So I knew who she was. She's doing amazing work. She's building businesses as an investor. She goes by the six-figure YouTube earner. Her channel is the Classy Climb channel. We have Erica Williams joining us. Erica, how are you?
How are you guys doing today?
Great.
Amazing.
How you doing?
Amazing. Amazing. Listen, like I was saying, I saw your things on your channel literally years ago, right? And that's the power of YouTube, because I found someone, you know, who looks like me, who's talking business. So I start watching your videos. And the great thing about YouTube is I've actually seen you grow as a business person, right? Just following your channels. And that's one of the beautiful things about YouTube, is being able to see that. Mm-hmm. So first of all, congratulations on everything you have going on.
Thank you. Thank you. I try to do a little new something every day.
That's what's up. So tell us a little bit about your background. Where are you from?
So the best way to explain it is I am a military kid. Parents both did military. Mom did 26 years. So they got to live in some really cool places. My brother got Germany and all this other stuff overseas. But by the time we were born, we got Alaska, which was amazing and beautiful place. A little bit of Alabama, Maryland, but mostly North Carolina. So I've just learned to talk to people, make new friends, and adjust to change a lot.
Okay, interesting. So did you attend college at all?
I did. I went to East Carolina University. Go Pirates. We were a party school. We still, I'm not gonna lie. We were on the Playboy Bunny list for the 18th, number 18th highest party school. And, you know, also on Playboy Bunny list that year, first year I went, they were like, hey, it's 8 girls to 1 guy. So I'm laughing about it. Oh, that's funny. They put that in the article. The next year, literally fall, it became 5 guys to 1 girl. So many people, it was so crazy, because you can tell the power of media. Mm-hmm. Dudes were really oh, that's where I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go to that school.
And that's crazy.
It was like, imagine being in class 1 year as a freshman, and it's a big classroom of 200. That's 150 girls, 50 guys. You go to class next year, it's 100 guys, 100 girls. So it was a culture shock, right? It was oh my gosh, you could do anything, you know?
That's
so
crazy. That's
a little
crazy.
Bit of silliness there, but yeah. Playboy Bunny used to be very powerful.
What was your major in college?
Oh my goodness. My major was sociology and business. And the more I got into business, I had a professor, I cannot remember his name, but he was like, hey, go to my next class and I'm going to teach y'all about stocks. I'm going to teach y'all how to trade. I'm going to teach y'all all this stuff, because they don't tell me what to do in the next class. So I sign up, right? And this is a way for him to fill up his other class. But I sign up and he teaches us how to trade stocks. Well, I get, and again, this is context. I was working in a financial aid office. I was getting 10 racks every semester. And East Carolina at the time, school was like $1,000. And so I was getting 10 grand every semester. I'm getting 5 grand in the summer, free money. Because my mom was in Iraq and like tribal money. So anyway, so I'm getting all this money and I put like 2 grand in penny stocks and it came out to 8 grand. And I'm like, and then of course I lose like 4 grand like 2 weeks later. But his class was amazing because I remember there were some girls in there who were from the other side of their tracks from close to where I was from. And I'm all like, oh, I ain't talking to them. You know, they from the bad side of town. Those two girls end up learning from his class, went and bought a duplex together, right? Because their problem was they were getting refund checks, but their parents were poor and wanted the money. So they wouldn't tell them about the money. And they went and bought a duplex. They saved up their refund checks, put them together, and bought a duplex. And I remember thinking, man, that was smart. I didn't did nothing but bought a Mitsubishi Lancer and go on vacations every two weeks. And sitting there telling people, you know, and just imagine you in the student loan office telling people how they need to be responsible. It's like,
yeah, and you just running amok.
I had a Mitsubishi Lancer. I crashed that thing. I bought another car. I mean, people were like, girl, you got money. I'm like, you know, girl.
You got a little money in it. You had them old college stimulus checks.
Whole stimulus. I mean, and for free. It was like, that's why I keep trying to tell people. I'm like, I didn't leave with that. Like, I left for the free 99 because there was just so many scholarships that people never apply for. They're just sitting there, and the family, you apply for it. The family's so grateful that you apply for their grandma's scholarship they put away for, that they'll give it to you. They'd be like, thank you for applying. You know, and you're like, okay. You know,
I wonder if it's still like that. I know there's the app. Oh, it's still like that.
It's called the index. You can go to any college, and you can go to any financial aid office and ask for the index. And, you know, some schools may call it something different, but it's basically the index. And you'll see, like, hundreds, if not thousands of scholarships that, you know, people, you know, they made a little money. They want to give back to their alma mater. No. So they, here's $1,000 for the semester. And then it just sits there because no kids apply for it.
I remember that
happens all the time.
I remember I was in school and a guy told me he had a scholarship. He actually, what's the guy's name? I think his name was like Matthew Lesko or something. He used to come on TV with the suit with the question marks. And he would have this big book. And it was a guy who told me he got the book when I was in college. And he said that he had a scholarship for people that wear glasses. And I thought he was lying until he showed me. And I was like, it's a real thing. So, it's to your point that there's a lot of money out there that people just aren't taking on a year-to-year basis because they don't apply for it.
It's just there. And it's not the school's job to promote it. That's the number one thing. It's not the school's job to promote your grandma, Mary whoever's scholarship for $1,000 to maybe two kids. That's not the school's job. So usually the family, when you initiate things like that, you send like 10, 20 grand for the next couple of years for the scholarship. So all of a sudden you got 20 grand that's been sitting there for 2-3 years. Ain't nobody used it. You apply and it may not even be the major they wanted, but they're just so grateful a kid applied for it that they usually just approve it, stamp approve it.
Oh man, that's a gem right there. That's a gem right there. So for those out there who are looking for college, make sure you look at all these different grants and programs that are out there as opposed to just like applying for student loans right off the bat.
Go straight to your student loan office and ask for the index. Even go on the website. Sometimes on their websites now they have them where it's just the index. It's every single scholarship available at the college. Don't let them tell you which ones they want you to look at. Like, tell them you want everything that's ever been endowed to the college. And you can get access to it.
That's game right there. So when you finished with school, what was the first thing you did? Like, I know of what you do now, but what was your first transition right after college?
So to keep it 100, I always tell people my senior year was very difficult. I had to stay an extra year because my grandmother and my father died within 6 months of each other. And my father died on Christmas Day. Ooh. And so like I failed a semester and I got a little inheritance and then I just acted a fool for about 4 years after that. And I was just like, my family was like, hey, just go in the Air Force. Cause if you don't know, our family's a very like traditional, everybody serves. It's just the thing we do 3-4 years. We get out, get GI Bill. And I just wouldn't do it. I was volunteering with the Red Cross. I'm going over here. I'm serving United Way. And eventually I was like working with campaigns in the state of North Carolina. But what I ended up finally doing as the money started dwindling down, I was like, okay, Let's get serious. And I started a coffee shop across from a historically black college called Fayetteville State University. And the coffee shop was called Sunset Coffee.
Okay. So you went right into business in with a coffee shop.
Yeah. And what was crazy is with the coffee shop, I hosted a film festival called Sand Hills Film Festival. I was the number one person. To this day, they still want to like buy that from me and they can't. Because I trademarked it. But Sand Hills Film Festival, I also had hosted a comedian special at my coffee shop. You know, I was mixing ice cream with espresso. And the kids would come over and be like, man, I love your milkshakes. And I'd be like, no, it's not the milkshake you love. It's the coffee. But it was a fun thing. And to this day, like all those, the people out of the comedy show, half of them went on to go to LA and like be in movies. So I actually like enjoyed that whole season of life. But then the city of Fayetteville start tearing up the roads to try to go closer to downtown, kind of fix the traffic in and out of Fort Bragg. So it made it dangerous for students to cross. So like me and three other businesses like went under in that time frame because students couldn't really cross the street, you know, safely. And what was so crazy, this is the part that's so like you get to see your life before you know it. The guy who roasted our beans was a military veteran, and he was trying for 6 months to get me to get an online presence and sell coffee beans on Amazon.com. But it was so new that I was like, I ain't never heard of that. I ain't doing that. That's crazy. Who buying coffee online? And looking back, if I had did it then, man, we'd be rich on rich now, right? That's a new concept when he was trying to, he was like, hey, I'm working with this other guy. Look what he's doing. He's selling it on Amazon. It's making money. And I was like, I don't understand, right? And it was the beginning of, you know, the 4-hour work week, that whole that mindset shift of putting things online, right? If I had been selling things online, coffee and teas online, I probably would have been stayed open, right? And just had income from the online brand. But, you know, hindsight 2020, but it was like, it was the beginning of like, this is the switch of online purchasing.
Yeah. And you had a brick and mortar. And one of the things I recognize is people who had brick and mortars, it's also a lot more difficult to get them to do it because they already have the brick and mortar. You mentioned something though. You said you trademarked that, right? You trademarked the name of the festival. Is that what you're talking about? Film festival. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. So what made, so that, all right. So I want to go back to
the reason why, because it was, you have the Pinehurst area and we sometimes call it the Sand Hills. And at the time, it was like several older people had tried to ask me about it. And that's when I was like, oh, it must be valuable to you. So I'm gonna go over here and trademark, right? You know, and so even to this day, I think I got like an email maybe 2 years ago where somebody asked me, could they use it? Could they buy it from me for like 10 grand? I was like, no, just because, you know, just I'm gonna hold on to it for a long time. But I don't plan on suing anybody or doing anything crazy, but I just wanted to make it known, like, hey, you can actually, you know, put your mark on something and it's yours. It's yours forever. You know, because people sometimes forget about history. They forget that somebody else started that ideal or started that concept.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting that you trademarked that. So that's powerful. How did you actually, so you talked about not moving right to Amazon when it was approached to you, but how did you get on YouTube so early? Because you can go back on your channel and you have years and years of content. You've been, and it's also, I'm going to tell you why it's inspirational too, right? So I look at your videos now and you get thousands of views on your video, right? But you can actually go back and see the growth, and like I was telling you earlier, in your business, but also your channel.
Yeah, I still got videos with 50 views on. I don't take them down because it's important for you to see the.
Yeah, absolutely. So even with our platform, we do amazing numbers on Apple, right? So I tell people, looking at our analytics, like 92% of our listeners come from Apple. Apple is just for whatever reason that's picked up for us. But you know, me and Corey this past year said, well, let's work on our YouTube channel because we have all this content. We don't really use YouTube. So now we're trying to build that YouTube channel out. And I say that to say, like, it was inspiring looking at your channel to see how you took it and you just kept at it. Yeah. What gave you that stick-to-itiveness, for lack of a better term, to just keep going with your YouTube channel?
Right. Well, one, I thank my father. He was stubborn, and I have that stubbornness. Two, I flipped a coin so I was supposed to get married in North Carolina. And when the whole coffee shop thing closed, some other stuff was going on, and then, you know, people, you're like, oh, no, this ain't going to work. So I flipped the coin. I said, I'm going to go to Nashville, Tennessee, or Austin, Texas. And when I flipped that coin, because every time you move, you gain something new. You gain new experiences, new insight, new something. And I'll go into a quote in a second. But, and so when I flipped it, I was like, Austin, Texas. And I got down here, and within the first 90 days, just so many things were just like boom, 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 boom happening for me that I was like, I'm gonna start documenting it. And I'm gonna show how I'm gonna go back to business ownership at some point. Like, I didn't know when, but I was like, oh, this job thing ain't for me. Like, I tried to get back in the matrix and I was like, oh, and every job I'd be at, I'd try to like improve things or make things faster. And they'd be like, no, 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 just do them how we want you to do them. And it was like, okay. Like, I just knew I wasn't going to stay in a job for long. Like, I couldn't breathe. I'd be like, this is so dumb. Y'all don't want to improve your situation. You know what I mean? And so I talk about that because I was going to give this little sci-fi quote is the movie Dune. Now, I don't mean none of the remakes and not the new one coming. I'm talking about the classic 1984. 1984 is the best year, right? And the guy is talking to his father. And he's like, father, like, why are we moving? You know, like, this is a good deal we have here. And he's like, son, when you don't move and you don't change, something inside us sleeps. And the sleeper must awaken, right? And so the son is 17 in the movie. He's like, okay, whatever. Well, of course, a bunch of stuff happens. And then, you know, he has this, you know, hero journey, of course. And he goes, father, the sleeper has awakened, right? And it's because it's like something in him did awaken when they moved and they fought and they went through challenges. And every time I've moved, something in me has awakened or connect with new people, new environments. And that's, I needed to document it, right? Okay. I needed to document it, not just for me, but for other people. So I have like a bunch of motivational videos and people are like, oh, I remember when you did motivational stuff. And I'm like, I did that for me. I ain't did that for you. I did that for me to kind of encourage myself on the journey. So,
okay. So that's how, and you just stuck with it and stuck with it. And what was it, or should I ask you this way? What tips do you have to someone who's just starting a channel out right now?
Well,
like, what would you say is the biggest thing you had to learn in terms of YouTube?
Well, so here's the thing about YouTube. The algorithm, or what I call Skynet, is ever changing and you should pay attention to it, right? Well, first of all, we've already had the first generation of YouTubers kind of go sit down. You've had plenty of people make their millions, been on YouTube 10 plus years, and they don't went and sat down. They done had kids, they done closed out channels. And so now you're kind of in the second generation. And what I tell people is, like, my channel, I've done everything wrong on my channel, but I still make money every single day because I've set it up like a business. I treat it like a business and I get paid like a business. So if you were to start YouTube today, and if you're one of those people who want to join my class, I'm going to tell you, go super niche, but you're still going to need to treat it like a business. See, a lot of people, the days of you just being cute and hopping in front of the camera and you're going to make all this YouTube ads and money, that's over. That's been over, right? You know, the whole fitness, I'm cute, that's over. Like, unless you have, and even a girl right now, Whitney Simmons, she's like one of the biggest in fitness ever. Even she finally had to concede to making drinks, making t-shirts, making brands, making an app, put, you know, products and services. Me just looking at you because you're cute is not going to do anything for us. If you don't have any products to sell, if you don't have an email list, you don't have a business. You have... Every third-party platform eventually performs the same. Those are their customers. Those are YouTube's watchers, not yours. If someone's not on my email list, then they're not my client, right? Yep. If they haven't bought anything from me, they're just a watcher. If they haven't super chatted or donated to the channel or purchased something, that's not my client. That's not my client. So I've done over 6,000 paid phone consultations over the past 5 years. And I assure you, the power is not in people watching you and hitting the like button. But again, I digress. But that's what I would recommend. If you're going to start a channel, be very niche. If you want to change what you're doing, like let's say you're all about credit and you want to start talking about something different, start a whole nother channel. Mm-hmm. Because you lose people along the way, right? Just like these fitness girls, when they get married and have a baby and start talking about Christian stuff, like a huge segment of their channel drops. A lot of them were just there to look at a cute half-dressed girl, right?
Yeah.
So again, you can even watch people now on YouTube transition. Like I can tell you from just years of marketing, I'll watch somebody, they'll be a fitness person, they'll get married, then they'll become a Christian person, right? And devotionals and marketing and that stuff. And then they'll become a mommy blogger. And then now their whole channel is about family. But you watch them when they were on fitness.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So you'll watch some guy. I mean, Levine, I'm not knocking him, but I'm going to tell him. He had a whole channel like never marry women. Women are bad. Women are doing this to you. Met an Asian woman, half Asian woman, fell in love with her, started having kids, and now has a family channel that makes millions of dollars. And men were literally in the comments for years like, yo, dog, you was saying women, you know? Yeah. People, women are like, oh, I thought you was MGTOW. What happened to that, right? And so it's this thing of we as people change.
Mm-hmm.
We progress.
Yep.
But I'm going to tell you, if you start a channel and it's very niche, just start another channel.
Yeah.
Because the audience that really want to follow you, they'll follow you to the another channel.
That's a great point. Because right? Again, like
I have other channels I'm working on, and I don't say anything yet for the books channel and the other channel, because I know as soon as I do, you're going to get a certain amount of audience over there.
Yeah, so. That's interesting. So like you said, and something I'm taking down too, because I'm learning as well, is that those aren't your clients or customers. Those mm-hmm. are YouTube's.
If I get on the phone with you and I ask you what your email list is and you say I ain't got one, then you don't have a business.
Mm.
I'm going to give you a prime example. There was on Facebook, there was a hip hop magazine. It was like in the kind of theme of like online magazine. And they got rappers coming in, interviewing people. They interviewing who's who, Steve Stout, all these people. They got staff. They doing stuff. They started to have an email list. And then one day, the Facebook page of 350,000 people just went away.
Mm.
Boom, gone. So they arguing. They're like, help us get our Facebook page back. We're trying to sell you to Facebook, and we're trying to do stuff. And people are like, well, where's your email list? Well, we only had like 3,000 people on the email list.
Ooh.
So you had 350,000 people buying stuff, sending in money, advertisers paying you for advertising spots as you interview rappers, and you had 3,000 people on an email list out of 350,000? That's less than 1%.
Yeah.
Even if I was a big marketing company and I could come and push for you to get your stuff back from Facebook, why would I? That's not enough people. Now, yep, if you told them, hey, I've got an email list of 50,000, 100,000 out of this big, you know, channel, then somebody's going to come fight for you. Prime example, Grant Cardone felt like Facebook was suppressing him. He said, we're going to take all items off Facebook today. If Facebook, somebody from Facebook don't call me and fix my traffic, because I've got like, I think he has like 300,000 people and he was getting like 17 likes on his posts. If my traffic ain't fixed today by 5 o'clock, we're taking everything off Facebook today. We will never spend another dime on ads. Tell you why his traffic went magically back up to 500, 1,000 likes. All of a sudden it switched.
The leverage. Yeah, so, that's that leverage.
So, you know, when people try to talk to me about their buyer's list and their this, and I'm like, oh, how many people on your list? If you ain't got nobody on there, you don't have any leverage. So,
yeah, great point. Those are all great points. And again, so I've seen you transitioning to the point now where, like, you know, you're into trucking and, you know, real estate and all sorts of investments. So you talked about that class that you had in college. Like, was that class what really like opened your eyes up to this world, or was it something you already wanted to do?
Life. Right. So So a little bit of history. Our family at one point in time had a lot of land. Doing well. Grandpa had a juke joint and a farm. And then life in 1980s took some of that shine off, right? Took some of that old money theme off. And to clarify what old money really means, because people think old money means money forever. Old money in the South really means you have a lot of land. But a lot of times people old money are church. They call them church mouse poor, land rich, right? Got a lot of land, but what can you do with the land? Because you ain't got no money, right? But watching my first job with my cousin came back from Kosovo. He did a contractor, overseas contractor, came back. He opened a dollar store. Now, not a franchise, straight up bought every shelf, had this catalog from China, buying items, toys, products, everything, filled the whole store up and is running an independently made dollar store. And that was my first job. And being there, I was like, he created this just from having cash and could go look in the catalog and buy all these products and services. Right. So for me, the sky is the limit. Right. Anything's possible. You can do anything. Right. And it you can do anything if you know the right people or you know what you need to do in order to get it done. Mm-hmm. So from then on, I mean, just my grandma, our family, just seeing how all my family members, even though they are very security focused, a lot of military nurses, they never stopped buying real estate, never stopped buying little cheap houses, little cheap properties, little cheap trailers, just adding and collecting because that's how you live well long term.
Got you. And I see now you're like really making moves in the trucking business. What was it about that business that made you want to parlay into that? And how's it going?
It's just paper. No. So for me, ultimately, what I want people to remember me as is just a business owner, a business investor. Trucking's going well, but trucking's not the end all be all. I've said this probably all year long that all roads lead to real estate. Right. So I'm in trucking. But what do I notice while I'm here? OK, the money I'm pouring out, thousands of dollars in repairs. OK, the money I'm pouring out for parking, the money I'm pouring out for, you know, moving drivers around, hotels and all that stuff. And immediately the light bulb goes back off. Ding, ding, ding. We need land. We need truck parking. We need a truck repair place and we need a hotel. Well, I had one of my YouTubers that watches my channel. They like for a year talked me up to some owners and was like, hey, I know this girl wants to buy this place. Knowing he didn't tell me nothing. I mean, I literally met him this year in January. He was like, yeah, here's this place. I get there. They shake my hand like, so you're the new owner? I'm like, what? And so I tell people it's really good to have people speak highly of you, right? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so this is I call it Texas Ground Zero. It's 18 acres. It's 15 acres in the back. Out of the 15 acres in the back, we're going to have 344 truck parking spots. We're going to have 3 or 4 food trucks in the front. The truck repair shop is the owners. One of the owners is probably going to stay on longer than the other and help us transition that business to be more productive. Because if you got 344 trucks parking at any given time, 10% of those people are going to want some kind of service. Right. Mm-hmm. So it'll keep the actual shop busy. We'll also have, you know, tires and truck wash and a healthy little food spot and, you know, Western Union inside. If you need a Western Union money and Wi-Fi all over the place, laundromat facilities. And the reason I'm doing that and getting a really good deal at owner financing rates, which is great. The reason I'm doing that is because I realized, okay, I'm paying $140 for parking and there's no parking anywhere. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about 10 plus trucks getting $140 per truck. And I'm just doing the math on that every month, adding that up. Okay, then I'm talking about repairs. On average, a truck repair is $1,000 to $5,000 every time you go through that bad boy. Mm-hmm. And I was just doing the math that all roads lead to real estate, right? Even trailer rental, right? Having the trailer that carries the cargo is a business all in itself, right? So some of the government contracts that I was trying to acquire, they were like, do you have 10 to 15 trailers that you can leave at this facility and you just keep rotating and picking them up? And I'm like, no, I don't have that many. Mm-hmm. All roads lead to real estate. You need land to park the excess trailers. You need land to park your trucks. You need land to do many things. And so I'm hoping in this transition, people will notice what I'm doing and I'll be very vocal about it because the second 3PL we worked with stole $60,000 from us.
Oh
yeah. So you're talking about me taking a hit last year on that. Then me getting this year and doing authority, having to replace 4 truck engines all around the same time. And so like I have plenty of thoughts on trucking, but again, it's just a business that gets you to your ultimate business. Does that make sense?
Like, yeah, absolutely. I like that. All roads lead to real estate. You know, I heard Kiyosaki say one time, he said, the only reason to do business is to buy more real estate. He said, every other business is just to buy real estate. He said, my books are just for a way for me to buy more real estate. Every business I do is to buy more real estate.
Grant Cardone too. I mean, so part of like looking back, I can tell people, you know, just even with conversations, I think back to my grandma and all these other people, like, get your land, right? You know, I'm trying to paraphrase what I remember saying, but the end of the day, the land is so vital and important. You know, like when I make jokes about reparations with people, I'm going, I just want my 40 acres and a mule. You know how vastly important 40 acres is at this point, mm-hmm. right? They could even give us 40 acres in the middle of another state, like Nevada, Arizona. It still would be valuable more than cash money.
Yeah,
people don't absolutely. Understand that. I'm going to leave that alone, but I just want people to think on that. You know what I mean? 40 acres. Yeah. And I want the mule too while I'm at it. But
no, I got you. Know,
I'll cash out people's mules, right? So what I want people to understand from this whole process is all paper. Like, I wrote the Smartphone Millionaire book because I want you to understand that, like, a LLC is just a piece of paper. You know, all this stuff, a business is just a piece of paper.
It's and that's how a good book, by the way, because I got your book. I read it. It's a good book.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Smartphone Millionaire. So, you know, and even the title is when we get a smartphone. Who doesn't want to make money from their smartphone, right? And we live in an amazing time in 2020.
Yep. A computer in your hand. Half the time people out here on this phone looking at just mess, all day mess. And so, you know, like, you got to think about it. We got kids on these phones creating apps, recording TikToks, going viral and all kind of stuff. But that's just it. They have a whole computer in their hand and they don't know. And that's why mindset is also so important. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
I think your parents are your first teacher and school is just supplement. School's just the additive. And people don't understand that. Like, school's just the additive. Half the people that, if you look at school now, people remember half of what they heard. They weren't even actively listening.
Yep.
So what do you actively listen to and study every day? Your parents, your family, your environment. You study those things.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
I know that firsthand because I have a 2-year-old. So I know exactly how that goes because all my 2-year-old does is say and do exactly what my older 2 kids do and then repeats all the curse words that I say when they do. Yeah. So I know exactly.
You have so much passion when you say your cuss word. They're like,
when I cuss at the older 2, the youngest one, he's walking around saying it, you know, to his little
saying
friend.
It to them.
Yeah. He's saying it to his 2-year-old friends. Like, shut the hell up. No. But I know your statement rings true because I'm watching it, I'm living it. So I know your statement is absolute facts.
Yeah, that's
all great. Like, watching my mother so she military paid, right? They get first and the 15th. I'd see her sit down with this green accounting notebook. I mean, it's like I can see it right now in my clothes. And she would open it up, write out her, this is how much I'm getting deposited to my bank from the government. This is how much my bills are. This is when they're due. And just dot, 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 dot to a T. And so I remember living in this neighborhood, which we still live there. And we had a house on a lake, you know, 3-bedroom, 3 bathrooms, 2-car garage, you know, lake, big yard, huge. And neighbors were like, how that divorced woman living over here? She must be getting alimony. She must be getting all this other stuff. And my mom would say, if 2 adults in their house can't figure out how to live over here, then that's not my problem, right?
Yeah.
People count my pockets, right? But what made me realize that is they weren't disciplined. They're trying mm-hmm. to figure out how one person could make it over here. And it's just the fact that their money wasn't put together. They weren't writing it down. Even now, when I get stressed about something, even if I have a bunch of bills coming, I'll just stop and I'll write them all down and look at it and go, oh, okay, well, that's not too bad. But it's from that imprint of watching my mother every first and the 15th, like clockwork.
It's something that's amazing, right? So even myself personally, like I have to write things down because sometimes even if you're stressed out about it, like it could be bill, whatever it may be, when you write it down, it's something about it, it makes you feel better, like just to be able to look at it. Whatever that is, like when you're trying to plan something out, whatever it is, you have to write things down. Writing down your goals is powerful. At the beginning of the year, every time I write down my goals or every time I have a new goal and I write it down, it does something for me just being able to write it down. So I think that's another great gem about just writing things down. So now you have all these businesses and, you know, you And I like what you said too. It's all paper. So all these businesses are nothing. It's just paper, right? And I think that's interesting. But the future of your business, are there other things that you're looking to get into or just do more of what you're already doing? What's the future look like for what you got going on?
So 100%, what I tell people is I do a lot of this, but I do have plans to exit. Right. You know, I'm going to get me my modern little farmhouse out here. I'm going to get me these babies. I'm getting married. I'm going to wrap that up. Right. And live well. Right. Live well. Most of what my goals are at this point is getting this project done and getting a hotel out there. Probably getting a certain number of properties in Cleveland, Detroit, and the Carolinas for my personal. Right. And Nashville, Tennessee. There's a number I have in my head, but we'll see how it fleshes out over the next 5 years. Because I tell people, if you just buy one house a year for the next 10 years and you look around, you're doing better than 95% of everybody you know.
Yeah. Yep.
Just yep. One house. I'm not even talking about extravagant multiple, you know, hundreds of houses. I'm just talking about one house a year.
Absolutely. That's why the first one is the most important one. Like, and that's another great point that I bring up all the time. You don't need 1,000 doors, right? I've seen people live amazing lives with just 5 properties. But the fact is they have those 5 properties and, you know, they work them. So it doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take a lot. And it all depends upon, again, what you said earlier was your discipline. Because if you're disciplined, you can do anything.
Yeah. I mean, and the reason I say one house a year is like you as a person are going to change over 10 years. So your income, your needs, your wants adjust. And the funniest thing I used to see as a real estate agent and like talking to friends, they have these couples who are like 40s, kids about to get out of the house and go to college. And they're like buying this massive house because they're like our kids and our future. And they're like, but in 2-3 years, these kids are going to be all gone to college. Why are you buying the most biggest house possible when you got a bunch of 15-year-olds in your house? Right? Because sometimes people are playing catch up. Right. They had that dream and idea when the kids were 2, but they finally got their money now and they're 15 and they want to show the kids that they got that money and they, you know. And, you know, if you look at a lot of studies, basically the number one time frame that people become investors of real estate and business creation are 35 to 55. The average first time business owner is 44 to 48 year old white male who's married and his wife works and he starts a low tech business.
Interesting. Okay.
And so what happens at 35 to 55? You start getting hit with that real. How much things cost? How much more money? How many more cars do you need? How many more vacations do you need? How many more boats do you need? You start getting real with the numbers of like, oh, my mom and my grandma may need help. My grandparents may need to be taken care of. My kids are going to need future college expenses, right? For people who are like even millennials. We're starting to have kids on the backside of the 30s, right? We're going on the 30s going down, right? So now the numbers are different. The numbers That's are different, right? 55 right now, if you're a Gen X, is anybody who's 40 to 59 years old. God bless you. Anybody who's Gen X, I pray for you because y'all ain't got it easy, okay? Especially in this economy and the fact that you're taking care of baby boomers. And then you might have some millennials moving back in your house after college. Everybody 23 to 39.
Yep.
So you're really a squeeze generation if you're Gen X. And I'm like, God bless you. Right. And so in those moments, that's why people are now looking so hard to invest. Like I used to think my audience was 22 year olds. Well, then I started doing inventory of my audience. My audience were people 32 to 50 years old. And that was because it got real. The math. Most of my consulting calls for a while were men who were like, hey, I'm 50 and I'm tired of being a security guard. I'm 50 and I'm tired of driving trucks. I'm 50 and I'm tired of doing this. I ain't saved nothing, but I'm really ready to change it today. And I go, you know what, sir? It ain't too late. That's okay. Guess what we're going to do? We can either buy one property a year for the next 10 years and then you'll be 60. And you'll have probably more rental income than all your friends.
Yep.
And you'll be just fine.
I like that approach because it's not like, you're telling someone tomorrow to go, you know, spend X amount of dollars. You're like, take it, take your time. Just one per year. The ask is one per year.
Take care of yourself and then take care of your future.
Yeah. You mentioned a hotel. You're working on a hotel right now?
So on the property, the 18 acres I'm talking about where we have that those trucks, we're going to probably design a small scale hotel, and that'll be for truckers because, you know, you can send your truck just about any time unless when they do an engine work. So if it's a serious engine repair and just sometimes you want to get out of the truck and take a shower. That's part of the point of having that hotel, kind of be a one stop truck stop that like entertains people. Plus the area where we're at, there's no hotel for 10 miles. You have to literally go all the way back to a whole nother like city, literally a whole nother city to the hotel. And so, you know, depending on how this first one works out, I'm definitely going to try to go around the corner and buy this other piece of land right off the highway and build a, like get a Marriott, like a real hotel.
Nice. Because,
you know, if you look at NAHOOP, it's NAB Hood. Essentially, it's the National African American Hotel Buying, whatever, group association that meets every year. Marriott and Hilton and all these companies, they've been trying to address the inequality out here, like doing different programs for minority owners. Well, who answered the call?
Mm-hmm. Who answered the call? Yeah, that's a good point because I know that
Indian Americans answered the call.
Yeah, I know Bob Johnson had went through a couple of those programs. He had a couple of hotels for his REIT that you know, when he sold BET, that's what he did. Man, you have so many like things going on, like, you know, between the
I really don't know. I always tell people it seems like it is, but it really ain't.
Well, you know what it is? You create things and like, you know, cause, and that's the beauty of like, you know, creating things that'll last forever. Like for instance, your smartphone, your book, Your Smartphone Millionaire. I forgot about it till you brought it up and I actually read the book. I'm like, that's you too, right? That's you too. You still have your course for YouTube, right?
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I have like 15 courses. Yeah. Okay, I mean, go ahead.
Where do you house all your courses at so we can make sure we send people towards your courses?
So it's on Thinkative. It'll be like the classyclimbhq.com. I think the staff is fixing some redirected links today, but it's on Thinkative. You can see it on anytime I post anywhere in the comment section or the descriptions under all my videos. That was my first natural funnel was people watch the videos, click the link, boom, go. Right. And so I had talked about tax liens, a really big part of that. I talked about, you know, using your laptop to create businesses. I talked about, you know, creating an investment group or, you know, create a fund with other people. I have several courses, but the reason I bring those up is I kept answering the same question over and over and over. And I just packaged that information the best I could and in a way that was interactive with people and put it in a course. Right.
Yeah, it's about time. It's about time. That's that leverage. But that's the great thing. You create it one time and it's there. A couple more questions before we get you out of here. I know that you also were raising capital, speaking of investment groups. How did that work out for you? Because we've heard horror stories. We know people that have been able to pull it off. How's that working out for you?
I ended up raising like 1.9 mil or something to that effect. And I managed like $2.2 million in assets right now. What I tell people is, vet and make the entry point higher. So let me put it to this way. I have people who have invested $100,000 with me, $150,000, money on money, right? I barely hear from them. I would have to chase them down and be like, hey, how you doing? Where you at? Hey, you know what I mean? And have you been to the weekly meetings, the monthly meeting once a month? I have people who invest $5,000 and they're like, hey, what we doing? Hey, what's going on? Hey, what's going on? And you're like, baby, chill. You know what I mean? And so you have to vet. You have to be super transparent. You have to have a lot of communication, almost over communicate. And you have to be educating people to see if they're the right people to work with you. Mm. Not everybody needs to work with you. Not all money is good money. Right? Point in being, I've been in business for over 7 years. Right? Whether it's YouTube and consulting and all this stuff. And I know the cyclical seasons of business and things take time. And sometimes things need to be on pause and you wait a little bit. Everybody's not in that. Most people go to work every 2 weeks. They better get a paycheck and it better be in their hand. It better be ready. It better be direct deposit. Right. The drivers are trained to get a check every Friday because the industry has trained them that every Friday you need a check. So let's say you direct deposit and it hits their account at 10 a.m. they calling you at 9:15, like, why it ain't here, right? And so you have to you have to realize when you raise funds what you're able to do, what you're not able to do. And you have to be very, very, very clear of realistic expectations, right? Because the problem is people see these numbers. Man, they see these numbers and they think, oh my God, they're making so much money in trucking. But the more I got into trucking, the more I started talking to people, really understanding how these businesses run. The businesses run off credit, a lot of them, right? Okay. A lot of times these businesses would, if they got two or three or four trucks running, banks are throwing money at you because deposits are just coming every single day. And those people do what? They in turn buy land, buy parking, buy all this other stuff, right?
Got you.
With the trucking business. So that's why I keep telling y'all all roads lead to real estate, because the more big heavy hitters I kept meeting in trucking, you know, their family would be in trucking for 50 years and you'd go, wow, well, how's trucking been? Oh, trucking's been crappy. But we take all the money we make out of it and invest in land over here.
Yeah. Or yeah, I got you.
Trailers and we rent them out to people. Or we own a bunch of trucks and we rent them out to people. Do you follow where I'm going with this?
Yep. I totally get you. Because I talked to like Pocky from Hood Estates, and he was saying that that's what they do with their money from trucking. They use it to buy real estate. You know what I mean? They use it to buy real estate. So that makes perfect sense.
So I always want people to have that transparency as they watch me and they watch this experience. And I'll do a big in-depth some kind of video maybe next year or something like that. Mm-hmm. Kind of give my 2-year review, because businesses aren't in a snapshot of like, oh, well, 1 month they didn't do great, so I'm quitting. That's not really how that works. But people don't understand that unless you educate them and train them. I'll show people, hey, my digital side of my business, you know, for 3 months this year, I had a struggle with three different businesses. Three of my businesses were like in a struggle mode. The money I made from YouTube came over and rescued all three of those businesses.
Nice.
I had loan money from one company to the other. So when I tell people like the power of YouTube, and prime example, if you see a video with 1,000 views, that person's in the top 10 of YouTube. Now, immediately you're like, what? 90% of all videos on the whole YouTube platform get less than 1,000 views. So if you get 1,001 views on your video, you are in the top 10% of YouTube.
That's interesting.
So when people be comparing their videos to somebody like a Graham Stephan or someone who the algorithm is clearly pushing, because that does happen, that has millions of views, like, oh my God, he has millions of views. Tai Lopez on his non ad boosted videos only has like 100,000 views. Think about that. Tai Lopez, that was everywhere. His videos that have no ads spent on them have 75,000 to 100,000 views. So beating yourself up for having 3,000 or 4,000 views is crazy. And it's disrespectful to your audience.
That's true too. Listen, you giving us so many gems. Like I'm actually learning from you as we speak, right? So one thing you said that I'm gonna hold this with me is about like when you raise capital to raise the amount, right? That sticks with me because I just read an article this week. I was telling Corey about this like yesterday. It was talking about Warren Buffett, and it talks about his A shares of Berkshire. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that he never wants to like, you know, do a split and keep the share price as high as possible is because the level of investor it attracts. So with his A shares, he's able to like, you know, kind of communicate and have a certain relationship, because everybody's not shilling out $300,000 for one share of a company. Yep. You know, so that kind of reminded me of that when you said, you know, make that price a little higher. Nice. Yep. Make that price a little higher.
I'll put it to you this way. I'm in 8 other investment clubs, and one's an apartment investment club, and you can't invest for less than 50K. You can't. Okay. Now here's the thing. You don't get your first payout for one of the investments they have for 6 months, 9 months. Imagine someone giving somebody 50K and know they ain't gonna get a payout for 6 months to 9 months. Some people will lose their mind. That's not the right. Right. So, another example, I invested in cacao, which is chocolate, in Belize, and I invested in coffee in Panama. You don't get money back for 5 years till they harvest. And the other one for 3 years till they harvest. People hear that and go, oh, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, I know. Which is funny because you hear a lot of times when, like, you know, people who have got in, like, before a company goes public, and everyone says, like, I want to be able to do that. And then I tell them, like, they had that money tied up sometimes for a decade. Sometimes for a decade. Yeah, like, you know, so I get your point. I get your point. That's amazing.
Can you tie $3 million up for 5 years?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's amazing. Listen.
Another thing I tell people is, everybody wants to get on a jet stream that's already rolling, a train that's already going. They want to get on that train. But if you ever talk to people about starting businesses, they give up so quickly. They're like, oh, I can't do it. Oh, that's too much. Because they don't have that endurance. They haven't built up that muscle, right? So I have this whole, like, course I worked on, but I never released it because it was like starting a business 72 hours. Because people think it's more than that. You could literally start. I've seen people this week go online, go on Facebook, create a free Facebook business page, have a food delivery service. They cooking in their house. They take really great pictures. Do you want this plate of food? Venmo me. Boom, 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 boom. Put your name, your address, and we'll deliver it on Tuesday from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Mm-hmm. at your house. And sold out for the whole week. So what happens is people put all this additional time on stuff and, oh, I got to make my website look pretty and I got to do this. And I got to, all these things don't matter. Talking to someone, having a sale, boom, done. Asking for the money. This goes in life and this goes in relationships. You have this whole big sea of people like, oh, I don't even know why dating's so bad. You have to go to someone in their face and ask them for a date. Oh, I can't do that. I got to watch them for a while. I got to observe them online. I gotta see their pictures from 5 years ago. I gotta ask them what's their personality scale and did they take this test? Stop. That's insane. Go into that person. And like this one guy said, I gotta get to know her before I go on a date. Baby, that's what a date is for.
Is take action.
To know them. So you see the hesitation there, and I'm a big believer, the hesitation you have in one part of your life goes into other parts of your life. So you see how many Americans are in like paralysis to even talk to another person. So now you're going to try to get them to get a business started? That's how I know most people don't stay at a job, and I'm okay with that. I just want them to get the best job that pays the most money for them.
Mm-hmm. And even if you are at a job, guess what? You still can invest. You still can learn to invest.
Even in the investing side of things, if some person, all they have is they $5,000 and they give you that $5,000, they're going to be watching it like a hawk. Like, I need this $5,000 to make miracles. Like, people keep thinking they're going to take $5,000 and flip it to $100,000. It's like, I don't know why, but even in our community, I feel like it's turned up on 100. Like, trust me, there's lots of white kids who act the same way and think they're going to flip money and stuff. But in our community, it's like, I'm going to take $1,000. And I'm gonna make a meal with it. You're like, babe, what are you?
Yeah.
Stop. Like, it's investing in a habit. It's a habit. Just like when you go every Friday eat pizza, it's a habit. When you go to the gym twice a week, it's a habit. All these things are habits, and so is investing. So that's if you do one Hail Mary investment, you're gonna go crazy looking at it. Like, why isn't it making me more money? Why isn't it doing more? Why? I went to lunch the other day with somebody who has 17 businesses. Now, if you hear these people on the street, is y'all doing too much? You're doing too much. This man has 17 businesses. He is on systems, and people work those businesses, and they just let him know the P&L at the end of the day. That's it. P&L at the end of the month. He ain't over there. He ain't making phone calls. He ain't running the place. He has people in place that do it. And it, what it does is what it does.
Because he has actual businesses. See, people that are entrepreneurs think they're business people. They're not business people. They have a job, but they created their own job. They're not actual business people.
Cash flow quadrant. That's the cash flow quadrant.
That's the better business.
Mm-hmm. Systems are the business. That if you don't have systems, you're not a business owner. You're an entrepreneur, and no matter how much money you're making, you might be the greatest entrepreneur in the world. You're still trading time for money. And your man who has 17 businesses understands that. That's why he can have 17 businesses. Yeah. So you said it. You said it all right there. Go ahead.
Yeah. So last couple things before we get you out of here, I got to ask you this question. In terms of your journey, right? So you took us back to the beginning, to now, you know, where you're doing all these amazing things. I want to know what has been the biggest hurdle or the biggest thing that you had to overcome in your journey to get you where you are now. Something that you maybe had to work on yourself or something that you realized along the way.
Realizing, sadly, that you could be a daggone genius, which I'm not, I'm a highly tested person, but not trying to be a jerk, but like, you could be a genius, but because you don't look a certain way, people will just toss it. They don't even hear you, right? So I remember going to like 20 banks and I had this bank book. It was a skill that was taught to me by a company out of Memphis. Their family had bought thousands of properties with it. And I was going to bank and these white men would be like, who showed you this? Who showed you this book? I'm like, I put it together. But who showed it to you? Or they go, who sent you over here to this bank? Who sent you? And I would laugh because I go, that's how silly our society is. It has to look a certain way. We won't touch it, right? Another thing is when I was doing this trucking this whole past 2 years, I would call places to go pay the bill. I mean, literally pay the bill. And they go, hey, we want to speak to your husband. Hey, wow. We want to speak to Eric Williams. Is Mr. Eric Williams there? And I go, on the paperwork, can't you see my name is Erica Williams? You know what I'm saying? Like you physically be like, can't you see that's Erica Williams, right? And I was working on getting finance from this one truck getting repaired. And this company was like, well, do you have any back child support? Do you have any blah, blah, blah? And I was like, these are extremely code-laden racial work. With like, basically I'm hearing, you know, if I really want to go there, racist questions being disguised as financial industry questions.
That's crazy.
And so what I would tell people is you have to really prepare yourself to be taken aback in some of these conversations with certain industries. And that's how part of me even being there, like even the conversations I would have with drivers where people didn't have bank accounts, where people didn't have just the basics of life in order. For me, I just realized how far removed I was. Or I just realized like classism became more real as I dealt with my businesses. Just seeing the things people were doing and saying, you're like, who taught you to act like that? Who taught you to do that? Who you? I'm for real. Like I'd be I remember talking with this one white man at a bank and he was just like, we were having this conversation and he was like, well, I know, ma'am, you're probably from a family that does way better than those other people. And I was like,
wow.
Like he just slid it right on in the conversation like it wasn't even a thing. And I was like hearing it, but not hearing it. Like, did he just say something?
Yeah, listen, I had an out of body.
Like,
listen, I had an experience with a bank where the guy told me like, you know, going through everything like, oh man, you know, you're a credit to your race. And I sat there because it didn't hit me right away because he was trying to give me a compliment.
Terrible compliment.
But yeah. I'm like, he doesn't realize that's not a compliment. What do you do? Like, you know, like, so I, man, but that's crazy that you know, can I speak to your husband? That's insane. That's insane in 2020 or 2019, whatever, but still.
Yeah. Or when I got financed for one of my personal trucks, not one in the investment group, but a personal one. The guy was like, well, honey, go ahead and tell me who you buying this for. And I go, what are you talking about? He's like, who are you buying this truck for? Are you buying it for your boyfriend? Are you buying it for your husband? Who are you buying it for? And I was like, and this is a bank, y'all. And I'm like, no.
Wow.
Well, you don't have no CDL. I said, I don't have to have a CDL. Well, man, most people who buy trucks have CDLs. I said, sir, 15% of the industry is owners who don't have CDLs. So what you're telling me is a lie. What you're telling me is discriminatory because 15% of the industry are just truck owners. You can't tell me this old white guy I know who owns a trucking company. He has a CDL. He don't have one. He don't have one.
Man,
so what you're doing is discriminatory. And so there's a lot of stuff I'd love to talk about in trucking and like the industry. Yeah. The banking, but for now,
thank you for sharing that though. Thank you for sharing that because you know that's important.
It just concreted for me that you need to. The reason I work like people are like, oh, I never raise money, Eric. I would never do that. every other race of people does it. Every other, anytime I've talked to any capital companies, they've just gone around and talked to their each other and their friends.
Yep. So we gotta learn to trust each other and work with each other. We have to. So last question I have for you is this. Give you a book or a couple books that have inspired you along your journey. What's your favorite book, or maybe not favorite book, something that's inspired you?
I think, you know, Robert Kiyosaki, The Cash Flow Quadrant, when I read it so many moons ago, was so better than every other book. I was like, why are y'all talking about his other book? That sucks.
We say that on every episode. Like, listen, everybody loves Rich Dad, Poor Dad. But to me, Cash Flow Quadrant, because it hit me in a way. Like, I started recognizing things from that book. Like, you know, even what Corey was just saying about the difference between, you know, being a business owner and being self-employed. So I agree with you there.
So that one, because it was like, your family can only give you advice from the position of where they are, right? Even my friends who are all here in tech, like, they had done so well from 22 to 32 in tech. Why don't you just get in tech too, and you'll do well too? But that's the only thing they can give you advice-wise. All your married friends, all they're going to tell you is you need to just go get married, right? Because that's the advice they have. You know what I mean? You have to really take inventory of who's talking to you and where they're talking to you at. Prime example, like what Grant Cardone is telling you, hey, you need to get in apartments and da-da-da. Okay, he's talking from a person who owns apartments, and it benefits him to own apartments. Everybody you talk to under $100,000 loves living in a house. Mm-hmm. Loves living in a house, want their kids raised in a house, want the American dream. So you have to realize when someone's giving you advice, you have to take an inventory of where they're speaking to you at and what position, right? And it even goes with what I was saying. Something, the biggest hurdle for me was watching men, and this is no knock, I'm not no super feminist or nothing like that, watching men who were underqualified, and they were qualified with just their ego, go out, speak, talk, and raise money.
Got you.
It looked a certain way. Part of, like, even this year, like, I remember this. I was at this event, and this woman was raising money. And I'll be honest, the woman was way overweight. She was way overweight. And I wasn't thinking anything about that. But I remember one of the guys at the table at the luncheon I was talking to was like, well, she's not even in control of herself. Why would I invest with her?
Dang, wow.
So this reinforced, people are looking at you. Okay, do they look a certain way? Are they a man? Are they put together? You know, prime example, I drive, and it's for a reason. I'm doing it I'm gonna do a whole video while I'm doing it, but I'm driving this 2017 Ford Fiesta that's paid off for a long time. I've been driving it, and people are like, why are you driving this car? Why are you, like, they're so like, Erica, get you a truck, get you this, get you that, get you this. Because in their mind, they cannot reconcile someone who's making all this money driving a reasonable car. Because if I were you and I was making money, I would be driving a Lambo, a slingshot, a this, a you know, a muscle car, a Camaro. And that shows you how trained we are in America to buy crap first.
Yep.
I gotta buy a car first, because if I have the car, I'm successful. I gotta look good with the shirt. I gotta have the abs, because then that shows I'm successful. So you have a lot of people out here who are on the outside dressing up beautifully, dressing in the best, and have nothing going on.
Yep. Nothing. Yep. So shout out to the Millionaire Next Door. That was a book that the Millionaire Next Door told you right there that's not how it, you know, it generally is.
Well, so, even when I was delivering pizzas, I was working a job that was making $60,000 a year, and I was delivering pizzas in the afternoon because I was like, oh, I got to have this extra money so I could go buy a real estate, buy a piece of property. So I'm working, and I'm paying off debt, and I'm working. And I would go deliver pizzas to million-dollar houses here in Austin, Texas. And the houses would be huge, and there'd be Toyota Camrys out front. Yep. I'd go over to these raggedy D, I'm talking about 1980s, roaches in the place, old wood raggedy stairs, 1980 apartments, and there's full of BMWs and Mercedes Benzes, and they're ordering pizza, can only tip $2, and like,
yeah. And so you've seen it. It's not just a book.
So
you've seen it.
So I would say the audiobook version of Millionaire Next Door is better than the book. The guy who actually, T.R. Hecker, if you go on Audible and hear them talk, it's super powerful. I think it's way more powerful than the book. And he talks about just investing and you know, are you a warrior or a warrior? You know, it's much more powerful in the audio version. And the last but not least is the 4-hour work week. I think Ferris. The best question. Yeah, Tim Ferriss, who now lives in Austin, Texas. Woo-woo. The best part of that book was, if something happens to you tomorrow, can you downsize? Can you delegate it away? Can you go sit down? Right? I had my appendix go out. And when my appendix went out a couple years ago, I mean, I'm crawling into the ER and they're such dummies. They're like, oh, she probably got food poisoning. And I'm like, what? So finally a doctor goes and looks. And he's like, no, her appendix is about to burst. But all the people that could do surgery have left the hospital. So we're going to just drug you up and wake you up in the morning and do surgery then. And I couldn't do anything for about a month and a half. And just sitting back and watching like dividend stocks and my lending club notes and all this other stuff just keep on getting paid. It was like, bing, bing. That's the light bulb. Can you sit down and still survive? If something goes massively wrong, can you make it? And can you build a business that runs without you? There's so many people who love a job. Like, let me be very clear. There is a huge part of our population, I would even say 90%, they love the safety, security of getting up every day, knowing what they're going to do, their tasks, and they're going to get paid on next Friday. They love that. Mm-hmm. They love it. Yeah, they're talking about all this entrepreneur stuff on the internet, but 90% of us love the safety, security of building something. It ain't got to be for us, but they just want to be building a part of building something. That's why people like working at startups and all this other stuff, because they're building something, right? So use that to your advantage. You know, 90% of us love having a consistent paycheck. Use that to your advantage. Even now with COVID, these people are like, oh my God, I got to go home, but I still got to work. Oh my gosh. Right? And I told people for years now that 1 in 4 women, I think more than that, I think half of women are going to go home in the next 5 years. And everybody's like, Erica, that's so silly. These women out here doing this and that. And I said, listen, the math is not in your favor. Mm-hmm. You know, childcare is the cost of $3,000 for people. If the average woman in America is making $3,000 a month, why would she pay that and go to work?
Yep.
She's going to go home. Now, you just had COVID tested out, where 40% of childcare centers are closing or permanently closing because their women can't come to work because they have kids. So you have this reset happening and people are, there's this book I was working on. I don't know if I'm gonna finish it, but it calls the pendulum swings back. And that's not even the title, but that's the theory. When something goes way this way, it always curves back.
Has to.
If you study and you research right now, the people who are having 4 and 6 kids are wealthy people, super religious Mormon people, super religious Muslim people. Those are the only people who have 4 and 6 kids. Other people ain't having no kids or 1 kid.
Listen,
the pendulum is coming back.
Listen, as someone who does like modeling, I create models. One of the things I know that everything always regresses to the mean. So it's always to your point, that theory is correct. The pendulum has to swing back. It just has to swing back.
It goes far out. It has to come back. I mean, I'll give people an example. If you go to Frisco, Texas, Prosper, Texas, master plan communities, they're building a community where the only kids that go to those schools are kids who live within that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And it's built like in a circle. And then within that neighborhood, they got everything they need. Walking trails, parks. If you look up the lagoon in Frisco, Texas, or in Windsong Ranch, perfect example. They got a whole, literally a beachfront. It's got sand. It's bright blue. On one end is super deep and you can paddleboard and kayak. And the other end is like a beach. They've built that in their community and you can't go to it unless you have an ID badge that lets you in. The school that's built there is only for the kids within those neighborhoods, the elementary, the middle, and the high school.
Wow.
So again, when people aren't paying attention, but this has been set up for a while, right? This, the pendulum swings back and your kids won't interact with their kids. You don't have income to be in that neighborhood. And it's not a black or white thing, because trust me, if you go to Frisco or you go to Prosper, tons of wealthy black people in Dallas are living in those neighborhoods. It is a
class,
a system thing. Yeah, it's a class thing.
Yep, pretty much. Listen, this has been amazing. You've given us so many, like, so many quotables and gems. Before we get you out of the court, you have any questions for Erica? Like, this has been amazing.
I got a thousand questions. We don't got enough time. Like, I got a thousand questions, but I do want to ask you one question. How did being a military kid influence you as an adult?
I was able to see discipline in real everyday life. Right. And yep. What happens to people when they get off that discipline? Because that's the scary part. I've watched people's marriages, people's weight, people's just their whole life just unwind because that discipline factor was gone. Right. And there are some people you meet them. They're born a soldier. They're like a soldier boy. They're like rule following, discipline, discipline, discipline. And then there's some people who went into the military and it forced that discipline on them. But whenever they left out of the military, it's like they just spun out of control.
Okay.
And so there's a shirt that says, "Don't give in to the war within." It's a really great veteran-owned company. And I really, if I could, like, another book that's really great is Joyce Meyer, However You Feel About Religion, The Battlefield of the Mind. The other book that's non-religious is the Power of the Unsubconscious Mind. You can get that on Audible right now. It's an old book. You might not ever find a copy, but you can get Audible. Okay. The Power of the Unsubconscious Mind. And it's you up here. I mean, watching people in military, like, go do amazing things and then just can't even balance checkbooks, can't keep a marriage, can't keep a relationship, can't be nice to people, you know, just without a mission, without a purpose, people really fall apart, you know? That's why the book Purpose-Driven Life is just important.
That's great. And thank you for all those great recommendations, because I've read the Millionaire Next Door, but I don't think I've ever listened to the actual book. I've read it multiple times. I've never listened to it, so I think I'm gonna go check Audible.
It's not a book. He's in an audio studio audience, and it's like he's doing like a talk through the book. But it's worth it. Like, to me, it's way better.
It's on Audible, you said?
Uh-huh. It's on Audible.
Okay, yeah, I gotta check that out. I definitely haven't heard that one, so I definitely gotta check that out. But Erica, I just want to say, first off, first and foremost, congratulations on everything you got going on. It's amazing to see. It's important to highlight people like you so our audience can see that, you know, we're doing amazing things out in this world, right? And I just want to say, keep up the good work. Thank you. And I will be checking out your courses too, because like I said, we're in the process now of trying to build out our YouTube after we built out our podcast. And thank you to all of our subscribers to our podcast, because we appreciate all the support, the thousands and thousands of listeners we get every week. We love it and we appreciate it. But now we try and get our YouTube up. So we try and be like Erica. So
right. We need that money.
So but with that being said, though, I'll make sure I put links to your social, because you're also an amazing follow on social media. I follow your Instagram and watch everything that you got going on. So I'll make sure I put that as well as
so I can stop cutting up.
Yeah. So I'll make sure to put all your links there. People, all of our audience, make sure you go check out what Erica has going on. She's amazing. She's doing amazing things, and she's a value to our community. So I want to say thank you for your time. We appreciate you, and you know, continued success.
Thank you.
All the successes in the world. Build that hotel. I don't even drive no trucks. I'm gonna come. I'm just gonna come see it.
Listen, it's everybody. Please, give us some feedback on this episode. Let us know what you think. You know, share this video and go check out what she's got going on. But till next time, as we always say, it's not about how much money you make, it's about how much you keep. Game elevates, and we'll see you on the next episode. Peace.